Cyrus Jones from 1810 to 1913 made his great-grandchildren believe you could live to 103. 103 is forever when you're just a little kid. So Cyrus Jones lived forever. Grave digger, when you dig my grave, would you make it shallow so I can feel the rain? Grave digger. Mural Stonewall, 1903 to 1954. She lost both of her babies in the Second Great War. Now you should never have to watch your only children lowered in the ground. I mean, you should never have to bury your own babies. Grave digger, when you dig my grave, could you make it shallow so that I can feel the rain? Grave digger. Full of roses, ashes to ashes. We all will fall down. Grave digger, when you dig my grave, can you make it shallow so that I can feel the rain? Little Mikey Carson, 67 to 75. He rode his bike like the devil until the day he died. And when he grows up, he wants to be Mr. Vertigo on the flying trapeze. Oh, 1940 to 1992. When you dig my grave, would you make it shallow so that I can feel the rain? Grave digger, when you dig my grave, would you make it shallow so that I can feel the rain? Grave digger, when you dig my grave, make it shallow so that I can't feel the rain. Grave digger. Grave digger.
My co-host tonight is Katie O'Brien, and our special guest, this is one I really looked forward to, is Alex Constantine. And again, before we go any further, the views expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHIN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. Alex, would you like to go ahead and tell the audience about yourself?
Well, I've been studying politics for about 22 years now. I actually started out here in Hollywood as a playwright and writing stories, that kind of thing. I also did some sidelining for the local press, and I'd been in Los Angeles for a couple of years and decided I wanted to do some hard news reporting. So I found a murder case up in San Francisco that sounded interesting, and this was a satanic murder. Didn't know anything about it, but I flew up there, attended the trial, and it was so barbaric. I was physically sick after the first day. Went in the second day, listened to the lead witness in the case describe the murder, and then I sort of grabbed him after that day's trial. Took him back to my hotel room and then proceeded to interview him, and that went on for about 3 days because I wanted to pick his brain and find out everything he knew about this murder. And this was a case of a homeless man by the, they called him John Doe 60, who'd been picked up off the street. Two men pumped him full of drugs. Then they proceeded to carve on his body. They ate one of his testicles. They carved a pentagram into his chest. And the man bled to death, and then they wrapped him in plastic and left him under a truck south of Market in San Francisco. So I wanted to, according to the lead witness, there were others who were involved with these two, and I wanted to know about the others. And as he described him, they were pretty powerful people in San Francisco. And then he told me that he'd been picked up one day and held for 3 days of questioning by the CIA. And all sorts of odd facts are figuring in here. There was an engineer who worked on Star Wars who was involved in this cult. And this was pretty much hardcore Satanism. One of the killers had a tattoo of a swastika on his face. The other one was pretty much just a ruthless killer. They both ended up with life sentences. And I came back to Los Angeles with all sorts of questions about the CIA, what their interest was in this, and the connection to Star Wars. And it took me about 7 years of hardcore research to answer all the questions that I had. And in the process, stumbled into fascism, began looking into that, fascists in the United States, fascist connections to politics, organized crime, the mind control element in media, why people think the way they do, and ended up with huge files and a lot of information that I had packed away. And then I attracted a lot of attention on myself, and there were death threats. There were a few attempts to kill me. I've been stabbed. My car was forced off the road, went flying off the road a couple years ago and demolished my car. And so, I've been right up against it, but all this time, now for the last 22 years, I've been learning everything I can about all this. It's a big, just anything. I mean, if we took mind control, it's a big subject, and it would take, months of shows like this in order to cover the whole thing. But, I try to get the important information out there.
And I look, we do have you scheduled again on the 8th of September, and I really look forward to that particular portion because I do want to get into the mind control part. But today, we had discussed somewhat getting into some other aspects because your work is so encompassing, and the really hard part for me to do when I get into reading your stuff is not to get off on tangents from the.
It's easy to do. I mean, because it's inherent in what I do. If I learn a name, then I go to learn about that name, and in the process, I learn two or three more names, and I start files on them, and it seems to just it just snowballs, the more you learn, the more you realize that you have a lot more to go.
It just
And I still feel that after 20 years of this, I still feel like, I'm just beginning. But
yeah.
It's a huge subject. I mean, you begin in the 1920s with the creation of fascism and take it forward.
Well, just go ahead. Anywhere you go, there's some really interesting, it's just all interesting because, if you're involved in politics or you name it, somewhere in the process, you start uncovering some really interesting stories. And we had talked somewhat about, the underground and so, go ahead.
you're talking about Operation Underworld, I think.
Yeah, Underworld, right.
Right, and the reason I mention that is because you go back to World War II and you find the OSS recruited segments of the Mafia in order to fight against Mussolini. And after the war, those organized crime elements continued to work with the intelligence community. Until today, you find that organized crime starts in Washington, D.C. A lot of other people have made that observation, but you come up with a real interesting map if you begin with Operation Underworld and trace the history of the people involved, particularly Meyer Lansky. Lansky died, but he... he left a number of successors who are still out there. And then the result is the Simpson case, the death of Michael Jackson, all sorts of things going on. Going back a ways, the murder of Jimi Hendrix, which started out a heroin overdose, but he didn't have any heroin in his body. So that was finally explained as Jimi Hendrix choked on his own vomit, which is pretty gruesome, but nobody asked, you know, what made him vomit in the first place, and it turned out he'd been killed by the mafia. And you find this interaction, especially in the music business, between organized crime and the CIA, because the mafia has been there since the jukebox wars, and the CIA became interested in the music in the 1960s because so much of it was anti-establishment. In fact, there were open calls for revolution, which got a lot of musicians back then in a lot of trouble. So you've got this symbiosis between the mafia and organized crime that actually crops up all over the place, but the press doesn't identify it as such. As a matter of fact, they're busy covering up the activity of these people. The Simpson case, for instance, as I know it, is not the Simpson case that most people understand, because the facts are totally dissimilar and they lead in a different direction. Just to give you an example, there's also Operation Gladio in Italy, which had the mafia all over it, intelligence. You find it all over the world, actually.
Are these
assassinations, including Kennedy. There was a speedboat racer who was, in my mind, the key suspect in the killing of mafioso Johnny Rosselli, who was found chopped up in pieces, stuffed in a can and floating in Key Biscayne Bay. And the key suspect is a guy by the name of Donald Aronow, who was himself murdered. And he was gunned down by the lead suspect in that case, is a guy named Frankie Viserto, who was a hitman for a guy named Joey Ippolito. Frankie Viserto at the time was also like the leading heroin distributor in the United States. He guns down Donald Aronow in his own driveway, and the police investigated and found that Aronow had been on the telephone with G.H.W. Bush for an entire week before he was murdered, right? So you look at these cases and you find the ties. You just have to keep investigating to flesh it all out, because the mafia, the press isn't going to do it for you.
When you mentioned that this was worldwide, is that whole world in cahoots, or are they little circles of people?
Well, fascism crosses all international boundaries. Right, you find it in every country, and you find the fascists in each country collaborating. In the build-up to World War II, for instance, you had General Motors, Henry Ford, collaborating with the Nazi Party in Germany. As a matter of fact, Henry Ford wrote the best-selling book in Nazi Germany, and that was called The International Jew, which sold 11 million copies.
That's interesting.
The reason the corporations are all over this stuff is because, let's get to the very definition of fascism. As Mussolini defined it, corporatism equals fascism, meaning you allow the corporations to do anything they want. They tend to the bottom line. All they care about is a profit. So in Nazi Germany, you have the Auschwitz camp and the Jews within who are used as slave labor. In the present day, you have companies like Nike who are using Thai children and paying them $2 a day to make tennis shoes and selling them over here for $120 a pair. That's fascism. It's corporations allowed to do anything they want. And that's why you have the Republican Party screaming all the time about getting the government off businesses back, because they want to be fascists. They want to go ahead and exploit labor, make as much money as they can, and often that's through duplicity and the interference in the political process. We don't have a true democracy because the corporations are involved in it.
And fascism actually was, it kind of got a more of an open door with the Bush administration.
Well, yeah, you had both sides of G.H.W. Bush's family were involved with Hitler. Prescott Bush was involved, and then the other side of the family, maternal side of the family, was just as bad. Prescott Bush was working on Wall Street, laundered his money to an Austrian bank, and it was being given over to the Nazi Party. And you find a lot of businessmen in the United States who were supporting the Nazi Party and made it possible. In fact, I don't think they could have even succeeded in waging war against the world unless they had capital from the United States. If you ever read Catch-22?
Yes.
Do you remember the Milo Minderbinder chapter?
Yes.
That's a guy who was selling to both sides and profiting off the war. And that's pretty much the way fascism operates. That's why we live in a warfare state.
And if you, just so the audience knows, I guess it's real hot in L.A. right now, and so you'll hear Alex's fan every once in a while here.
And you'll hear me sweating.
And so with all this fascism, you also... Well, I started following the thread of the underworld and
Operation Underworld. Yes.
Yes, and I don't even know where to begin on all of this again.
Well, let me make my point about the Simpson case.
Okay.
You know, I say the average person may have followed it day after day, the trial back in 1994.
I'm one of them.
And he may have read all about it in the newspapers, thinks he understands it, and I'm telling you right now, he doesn't understand the first thing about the case. And that's because key information was filtered out by the media. People were led to believe that Simpson was the killer. And I mean they were led. There were dirty tricks played in the media to lead you to that conclusion. But there, like I say, basic facts are unknown to anyone who watched that trial. For instance, A.C. Collings is well known. He was Simpson's best friend, right? What did A.C. Collings do for a living? You know because I told you the other day.
Right.
But he was a bodyguard for a guy named Joey Ippolito, who was one of those successors for Meyer Lansky that I was talking about. He'd been driving the car and bodyguarding Joey Ippolito for 8 years when Ippolito was arrested in 1992 for cocaine trafficking. Now understand there were records that show just numerous telephone calls between the Simpson house and Joey Ippolito, A.C. Collings' interactions with Ippolito and O.J. Simpson and the whole crowd. Ippolito gets arrested. He's convicted to 10 years for cocaine distribution in Santa Monica primarily. And then he gets a 10-year sentence, and guess where he serves out his sentence? At a minimum security prison on a military base in Pensacola, Florida. Okay, 3 weeks before the Simpson case takes place, Ippolito walks out of that minimum security prison. I called the FBI and asked them how they could possibly let him escape. The FBI told me they wanted him to escape and let him escape so they could see who he contacted. So I asked the FBI, who did Ippolito contact? Who did he contact? O.J. Simpson. He had a sit-down meeting with Simpson 2 weeks before the killings took place. I mentioned Frank Viserto, who is the hitman, the key hitman for Joey Ippolito. What is it about Frank Viserto that makes him such a ruthless killer? He likes to torture people with knives and cut their heads off, right, which is exactly what you had in the Simpson case. Simpson goes to trial. A.C. Collings has a girlfriend who's a stripper who gets arrested on a train on the way up to Washington State. They found 40 kilos of cocaine in her suitcase. So they arrest her. They put her on a plane to send her up to Sacramento to be arraigned. She tried twice to jump out of that airplane. The Contra Costa Times comes along, asked her what her connections to A.C. Collings was because his name turned up in her address book. They call A.C. Collings' attorney, who says there's no connection between this woman and A.C. Collings, but the Contra Costa Times investigated and found out that they were lovers. Okay, so A.C. Collings had a lover on a train during the Simpson trial who got busted with 40 kilos of cocaine, and the media doesn't find any of this interesting. What do they cover? Marcia Clark's new hairstyle, right? Interviews with Cato the dog, right? And in the end, you don't know anything about the Simpson case except what the media told you, which is next to nothing.
And they have maintained that border.
And they continue to do that. They laugh at Simpson, you know, they roll their eyes and so forth. And they haven't told you a damn thing about that case or the organized crime connections, the ties to the CIA, and so forth. the Lansky Syndicate. Ippolito lived on the same block as Lansky down in Miami. So did the local police chief, a guy by the name of Dick Gerstein, who left the police force and went into business with F. Lee Bailey, which is why he turned up on the Simpson defense. You see my point? A lot of interconnections in history here that the media doesn't tell you about.
Now, was this recognized knowledge, though, among the press at all?
Pardon me, can you repeat that?
Was that recognized knowledge among the press at all?
They suppressed this information.
Okay, but even though it was suppressed, was it known?
Oh, it was known. You could go to any library and find these things. I did this in the public library in Los Angeles. That's where I did my research. It was that easy. You just have to go through the newspaper files and start putting the history together yourself. And you find out there's a completely different story going on there. But, you know, people are dead set in their beliefs. And I'm talking about one case now. Let's take someone's knowledge acquired over a lifetime from the media. He still doesn't know a damn thing because the media is just operates in a warfare state, and the basis of the American media is censorship.
It does a good job at it, too.
They do a very good job. Now, let's get back. Let's talk about the media for a little bit, okay?
Okay.
Go back to the beginning of the last century, and you've heard about the muckrakers and the yellow press.
Right.
Basically, what they were doing was investigating corporations, right, the meat industry, and how they were poisoning us with their, you know, their products and their labor problems and so forth. And the corporations didn't like being investigated, so what they did is they bought up the media. Right? That's why you find major magazines owned by the Pew Corporation and so forth. So what they did is they suppressed the investigations, and then they made muckraking a bad word. Right? To this day, muckraking is a bad word. You know, stirring up, you know, trouble with the press, you know. So this goes on for half a century, and then the CIA is created in 1947. A year before that, Alan Dulles, who would be head of the CIA, makes his first priority planning agents in the press, buying up entire the magazines and newspapers. And what happens then is that the propaganda function that had been coming from the corporations now becomes a CIA function, and the American taxpayer pays for his own propaganda. Right? So you turn on the tube and you watch any cable channel, chances are you're getting propaganda. And propaganda is mind control.
Well, you know, what's also interesting out of that is that you're finding also CIA fronts is business. I mean, they create their own businesses going, so you don't even know that you're necessarily doing business with the CIA.
Well, the CIA is like the private army of the rich, right? They don't serve us. They serve the interests of the rich. And now, just to give you an example, back in 1967, the oil companies discovered land in Guatemala. The problem was that piece of land was owned by Indians, and the Indians had it by agreement with the government. So what happened was the CIA comes in, drops napalm on those Indians, burns them all alive, right? And then the Guatemalan government sells the land to the oil companies cheap, and they begin drilling. That's a classic example of how the CIA functions.
Now, what was their? Did they give any kind of reasoning behind what took place for the press?
No one knows about this. Right, this is totally out of the newspapers, right? They burned alive a whole tribe of Indians so the oil companies could have the land cheap in Guatemala. Right, this is how the world really operates. This is how the United States operates.
Well,
you're lying to the public about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. That's standard procedure. That's not an exception.
Right, right. And one of the things that I found in doing research on some places where you usually find a lot of fighting going on, start looking for the resource in the area and then start finding the corporation that's involved with it.
Yeah, and then that military action makes sense. Same with the overthrow of Allende down in Guatemala. What they don't tell you is how bloody these operations are. In the overthrow of Allende, the river that runs through Santiago, the capital of Chile.
Uh-huh.
That's the Santiago River, and it was dammed up by headless bodies that were thrown in the river during the coup.
Oh, my goodness.
The whole river was dammed up.
And this is
and
a
that's
large
a,
river.
That's a CIA operation. Aren't we wonderful people? Number one. We're number one.
Well, it sounds like
we've made the Nazis look like Catholic school monks. You know, we've killed millions of more people than the Nazis ever did. We're just as brutal and just as dishonest.
And why do you think other countries even want to enter into any type of contract with us?
Well, that's a good question. The only reason they would is out of self-interest. You've got North Korea now dying to talk to us because their people are starving. You know, they need aid. But we won't talk to them, so they keep trying to get our attention. Why else would they? We've got the money because we've stolen resources all around the world. We've overthrown democratically elected governments in every country, including countries like Greece. Right, and installed military dictatorships. We put a fascist in power, and that's how we control the world. Because we control their fascist dictators.
And all the while, again, while the media tells us that we're spreading freedom.
Yeah, it's all about freedom and democracy. That's why we have Obama getting on TV to say we had nothing to do with Honduras, while Otto Reich from the CIA was on the telephone directing the coup down there just a few weeks ago.
Now, is it still fairly easy to get all that information for the average person to get that kind of information if they start digging in on this media or start digging into it?
Well, you start with your own interests. I mean, everybody has their own resources and interests. I have mine. You know, you have yours.
Right.
And, you know, if you have a case, just, you know, take something like the Kennedy assassination. People are going to give you a hard time for looking into it, right? John Kennedy was gunned down on a public street in broad daylight, and if you even look into it, people start calling you names. You're a conspiracy theorist and so forth. But, you know, we're intellectually honest here, aren't we? We can look into the Kennedy assassination and be responsible about it. And it doesn't take long before you realize that the Warren Commission report was a complete lie. You can look at the Warren Commission report itself and read it, and determine that it's a complete lie.
And was that all paid for by corporations?
This is what it's about. It's about there were corporate interests. But in the case of Kennedy, if you saw the movie JFK, the premise was that he was going to pull troops out of Vietnam, and that's why they killed him. That is not why they killed him. The machinery to kill John Kennedy went into motion the very moment he was elected. That is, the pieces started to get moved around. Oswald, you know, goes off, runs off to Russia. The figures in organized crime who did self-implicating things, and this was all by design, leading up to the Kennedy assassination.
And why do you think that he was killed? It's because they were going to remove troops from Vietnam?
He was never meant to be president. Nixon was supposed to win, and Kennedy pulled off a surprise victory. They had groomed Nixon throughout the 1950s. They thought they had it all wrapped up, and then Kennedy came in ahead of Nixon, which just destroyed everything. It took them another 8 years before they could get Nixon in office. But the problem with Kennedy is that he understood what was going on. Just a couple years before, he had given speeches to private donors in which he talked about fascists in government. He talked about the secret government and the CIA and so forth. So by the time he got there, he had a pretty good idea what was going on. And he learned when he became president, he continued to learn, and he was becoming more and more sophisticated, and that's why he had to go.
Well, with Nixon, what was their plan for him to beat Kennedy, just to have another state of control with our government?
Well, you see, Nixon was, I was talking about fascists in the United States. Nixon was part of that, back during World War II, he was a black market rubber dealer with B.B. Rebozo. And now, this is treason. I mean, we needed rubber desperately for the troops, for the military, to make tires and so forth. And here's this Nixon on, you know, selling the stuff on the black market for a big profit. Then after the war, there was a high-ranking SS officer by the name of Otto von Bolschwing who comes to the United States. Richard Nixon goes to a secret account at Chase Manhattan Bank, takes out $1 million, and sets up this SS officer in California. The INS wanted to deport Otto von Bolschwing, but Nixon saved his hide by running to Congress and lobbying to have von Bolschwing stay in the United States. So we had this high-ranking SS officer living in what's now the Silicon Valley. He started up one of the early computer firms, and they ripped off his investors. And this was in the 1970s, and at the time, this was the biggest stock fraud in American history. None of this is in the newspapers, right? You don't know about Nixon's connection to this SS officer or anything else about Nixon's fascist past.
And our media was responsible for keeping that a secret?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. There's so much censorship within the media because every major mainstream publication has people at the top who are pulling the strings, appointing editors who will play the game and so forth, and if they don't, they're out. But so this is Nixon's true past, and he had been chosen because of the favors that he did for Otto von Bolschwing, who was a part of Odessa. In fact, he was a major part of Odessa, which was the organization of retired SS officers. Nixon gets rewarded by with the Oval Office. That was his reward. He could also be basically trusted to do the right thing, you know, in terms of fascism, which he did with a gusto. And that's why he ended up being forced out of office, because he did his job too well. Tapping telephones, right? You know, foreign coups, slush funds, bugging telephones. That was Richard Nixon.
But also the Kennedy family didn't come from a spectacularly...
No, Joseph Kennedy was another one of those fascists I was talking about.
Right. So,
and before World War II, they were out in the open. You know, they had big pageants at Madison Square Gardens. They filled the stadium. People waving Nazi flags. It's very much a part of American life, only now people don't talk openly about it. But the racism is there.
No.
And so are the attitudes. You watch right-wing television, they lie through their teeth, you know. They're deceptive, duplicitous, you know. They're constantly moving the country to the right. And that's the objective. In the end, we have open fascist rule, and that's the way they want it.
Which is, I find kind of interesting, because some of the research that I've been doing lately has really shown that there's a lot of socialist, communist, whatever the term you want to use, even liberal leanings there. So where is
I'm not sure what you're saying.
Okay, what I'm saying is that there's a lot of paper documents stating that there was a lot of, what took place during the McCarthy era, where there was a lot of people that were leaning in that direction of communism, meant that they were leaning in that direction, and you're saying no.
Well, McCarthy was a Nazi collaborator.
Okay.
So after the war, he freed up Nazis who'd been arrested for war crimes. He freed them up so they could work for the intelligence community.
Our intelligence community?
Yeah. That's what McCarthy did before the hearings.
I've got so much more time to spend on your side before I get all this under my belt.
See, the reason there is fascism is because in Russia, the communists were taking over, and they were hanging rich people, right?
Uh-huh.
And then they were taking away their wealth and privilege. Now, you can imagine, let's say you're a rich man in Germany, you know, you own corporations, and you see communism rising in your own country, and they want to take your wealth and privilege and hang you from the nearest post, right? What do? You work up, you devise your own totalitarian system that's the opposite, and you put down the communist uprising, which is how Hitler got his start.
Well, then what about the Gore connection with Occidental and that sort in the Stalin regime?
You lost me when you got to Stalin.
Well, my understanding is that with the Arm and Hammer and that sort, and that they were involved over there during the communist era. So
I think you're confusing communism and fascism.
Maybe I am.
And can you give us a brief description of the difference?
And before you go any further, give the audience your websites.
Sure. That's, you can go to Alex Constantine's Blacklist. And I have four websites, but that'll get you to the others if you're interested in those. I also have Alex Constantine's anti-fascist bin, research bin. And I have one on the media. I have another one on 911. And then I have one that's just my music. And you listen to that. But to answer your question, where do these two ideologies come from?
Right.
Let's go back to the year 1800 and the rise of industry. And you have a wealthy class that owns and manages industry in England, say. We'll use that as an example. And then you had a lower class that was being exploited and living in mud shacks and throwing their babies in the river because they couldn't afford to raise them. Rampant disease and starvation and so forth. And then you had a middle class that's looking at this, had deep sympathy for the lower class children. For instance, children were working in the factories 12 hours a day. And you had a middle class who felt badly about all this. And they sought a solution. So what they did is they started up what's known today as utopian societies. And those utopian societies tried to work out a way that society could function that would be fair to the largest number of people. And then you had the wealthy class, the industrialists, who wanted nothing to do with that. They wanted to continue to exploit and use child labor, and they didn't want any labor unions. They wanted nothing to do with a so-called utopian society. Well, then the 1800s progressed. Utopian societies evolved into socialism and finally communism. And then at the other end of the spectrum, the industrial class in the 1920s became the fascist class. And then you have both ends of the polar spectrum at odds with each other and continuing to struggle right up to the present day. So communism wants to stop fascism. Fascism wants to stop communism.
But you don't see that as a blending in there? No.
What you're thinking is both systems are authoritarian, right? Stalin killed people, right?
Right, right.
But put yourself in Stalin's place. Now, you're running Russia, and you have a group of white Russians out there who want nothing better than to take you down and burn you at the stake, right? In fact, they're collaborating with fascists in the United States and Germany to overthrow your system and convert Russia into a fascist paradise. What do you do about it? You take those white Russians and you send them off to Siberia because you don't want fascism in your country, right? So Stalin killed a lot of people. Yeah, that's because he wanted to preserve the system that they had and stop fascism from getting a foothold in Russia. That doesn't mean I'm sympathetic to it. I just understand it because I hate fascism as much as anybody.
Well, wasn't a lot of Mussolini's thoughts kind of based on fascism but extreme to communism?
What are you saying? See, what you're talking about is right-wing propaganda that says communists are fascists, and that's a complete lie.
Okay, I wanted to make sure our audience understood that, because I think it's really blended.
That's all coming from the right wing, which doesn't want you to understand that they are fascists. So they tell you that the left wing are fascists, and then you'll hate the left just as much as they do, and then you'll become a de facto fascist yourself when you go around repeating this nonsense. It's well known that fascists are right wing, communists are left wing, and that's the way it really is.
Well, who was our first real fascist pushing president here in the United States?
Eisenhower.
Of course.
People are trained, they're programmed, they've got their beliefs, and they'll fight to the death for those beliefs, but I'm telling you, Eisenhower was the first fascist president. But he had qualms about it when he left, so he blew the whistle, right? And he said there's an industrial-military complex, right? Watch him, don't let him get away with it. And he was telling the truth for the first time.
Did he wait until he was leaving?
Yeah, he was leaving office, and in his last speech, he warned about the military-industrial complex. You saw it. You ever see Schindler's List?
Yes.
Well, you remember they had a factory, and they were making pots and pans and all that?
Mm-hmm.
For the military, that's a military-industrial complex. How did they get rich, those corporations who were collaborating with Hitler? They got rich off the war and through the use of slave labor. Right, that's a fascist system.
Well,
perpetuates wars. That's why we're constantly at war with somebody.
Okay, now where is Russia in that process now?
Russia's one of us now. They're as fascist as we are.
Okay, all right.
They lost it. Although they're considering going back.
And with which leader did they lose it?
Now, that's a good question.
Was it a slow, steady progression, or...
Yes, it was, and it had a lot to do with us, with covert operations in the Soviet Union. We had Reinhard Galen over there as our head of the BND, but he was also one of the very first CIA recruits. There was a time when all the agents within the CIA were Nazis, and Reinhard Galen is the one who brought them in. So what did they do? They spied on the Soviet Union, and they were saboteurs. They tried to trip up the Soviet Union, demolish their economic system until there was nothing left.
Then what would have been our purpose in trying to bring in the Nazis, fascist in here because of our fascist leanings then?
It's fascism. First and foremost, fascism is anti-communism. We wanted to destroy communism in the world so that the fascists would have a hold on everything. And pretty much they've accomplished that. If you're a Latin American country, you have nowhere else to go now. Either you remain independent, like Venezuela, right, or you throw in with the United States, and that's what most of the countries have done, because we installed their leadership.
Do you think the people in other countries are aware of that impact from the United States?
They're more aware of it than we are.
Is that because of their press?
In part because of their press, but also because here information is filtered and kept away from the average person. We're fed a constant stream of celebrity nonsense, right? We get shallow news reports. Anything real is filtered out. So Americans just have no idea what's going on. They think Bill O'Reilly is a real human being.
Okay, they don't realize
about...
he plays a character on TV?
He's a mockingbird. That's what they are. I was talking about Alan Dulles and taking over the press. CIA, Operation Mockingbird was run by a guy named Phil Graham, who was publisher of the Washington Post. And he was also a friend of John Kennedy. After John Kennedy was killed, Phil Graham lays around on his couch in his office with a bottle of bourbon in his hand, mumbling that the CIA is trying to kill him. Right. Eventually, he's put into a mental hospital, which was called Chestnut Lodge, which is where the CIA was doing its mind control experimentation on the East Coast. One of the places. He comes out of the Chestnut Lodge and blows his head off.
Okay, now is this...
This was the head of Operation Mockingbird, which is the program, mm-hmm. right, that most of us are subjected to now with the media. That is, those people you're watching on television aren't news people, they're propagandists. They're military propagandists.
Right. Now, and Katherine Graham took his place.
Yeah, then she takes over.
Okay.
Actually, what they did is they killed all the heads of Operation Mockingbird as American publishers. The very first CIA assassination was George Polk. You're familiar with the George Polk Award for journalism?
Yeah.
That was the first CIA hit in Greece. And we're arguing now, does the CIA assassinate people? You know, Cheney had a secret program that really didn't kill any people. That's all crap. You know, CIA's been killing people for the last 50 years.
And their predecessor was the SSS, correct?
Repeat that?
And the predecessor to the CIA...
was the OSS.
OSS. And were they just as big a killers?
No. The OSS, 9 out of 10 people working for the OSS were anti-fascists. But at the end of the war, the OSS was disbanded, and they kept 1 out of 10, and those 1 out of 10 were far right wingers, because the CIA became a fascist organization. Like I said, in the beginning, the only agents who worked for the CIA were Nazis. And they went on to have a large part in the assassination of Kennedy and a lot of other turmoil in American life.
And they were very much involved in playing both sides of the fence, though, during the war, World War II.
What do you mean, both sides of the fence? Yeah, this was particularly true in the last year, because in 1944, the German General Staff realized they were going to lose the war. So they started making preparations for the post-war period, actually the post-war phase of the war, which continues to the present day. And, basically the war rages on. But it's a Cold War now, and they do it through infiltration, spying, propaganda, front organizations like the German Marshall Fund, which is a Nazi front. A lot of think tanks are fascist, you know, and everybody's programming our heads.
I know that they use a lot of blending in the language and that sort, and blending of terms, and I think.
Oh, they've done their studies on mass persuasion, bandwagon theory, that kind of thing. They know how to persuade us to go to war. They did it with Iraq, and you saw how it happened.
Right.
Through mind control.
Right. And they haven't stopped since either.
The interesting thing is that NPR, if you turned in at 3 o'clock in the morning, they were blowing the whistle on it. And then in the daytime, they'd completely reverse their position and make it seem as if Iraq was a threat.
And did they keep doing that?
No, but they were actually trying to do something about it. At least their night crew was.
Interesting.
They were talking about the Niger documents before anyone else. As it was happening, they were talking about... Valerie Plame and all that.
Right. So, now where do you think they're at now?
Where do I think who is?
NPR.
Oh, NPR is very much a CIA operation. Just go look at their directors, you know, it's unbelievable. The people running that organization.
How would you find that out?
Just go to their site and look at, you know, their board of directors, and you'll see right there they come out of Voice of America, you know. They're basically corporate. You know, any honest conservative would even tell you today that NPR is a conservative news organization.
Who owns it?
No, it's not owned. It's a public radio network.
No, who funds it would be the better way to say that.
We do. That's the irony of it. Okay. They milk us for our own propaganda. You see my point?
Right.
That's what I was saying about the CIA. We began to pay for our own propaganda and mind control.
Well, that's not the only things it seems like that they've got us paying for. So it's not the only thing things they have us paying for if they get done with, you know, what they're doing with the economy and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. They loot corporations. This has been going on a long time. I was talking about the CIA and the Mafia. That's the same combination that ripped off the SNLs back in the 80s.
Right.
Had to do with Neil Bush, correct?
Neil Bush was one of them at Silverado. But I'm talking about SNLs all over the country. They were systematically looted, emptied out, and all that money disappeared. And in each one, you found that the head of that SNL was out spending money like crazy, so that they had a lone assassin, so to speak. They could point the finger at one guy who was obviously wasting money, right? And let's say in Omaha, there was a credit union there, $43 million disappears, right? And the guy who ran that credit union spent maybe $1 or $2 million of that, and he went to prison for a short time, right? But you're talking the unexplained disappearance of $41 million. Where did it go? That's one bank.
And there still is no trace of where that went, correct?
Nope.
And
this same guy was a local controversy because he'd been involved in child porn. And that's another way they make money.
Go into that a little bit.
Child pornography?
Well, isn't that the Franklin case?
Yeah, that's the Franklin case.
Okay.
I mean, the average DVD of child porn will sell for about $4,000 to $5,000, right? It's big money. And that's why the CIA became involved in it. And in the 80s, they were very involved in it.
And they're not still as much, or?
Oh, they probably still are. It's just not a subject that I look into that much.
Uh-huh. But that's not the only thing that they're, you know, that they're involved in.
I made this accusation about the Omaha group, and the local chief of police there sued me, right, and said he didn't know any of these people, he didn't know anything about child porn. I won that case.
What year was that?
This lawsuit?
Uh-huh.
This was just last year, 2008.
Oh, I didn't realize that it was still...
Here it is. I mean, I wrote the story and published it back in 1994, but he just got around to suing me, claiming he had nothing to do with it, because he can't find a job. He was fired from the local police department. He went to Wilmington. I had him fired there.
And what about...
Wilmington, North Carolina. Now he can't find a job, so he decides to sue me for libel and claims none of it's true. But it was all true.
And so what about the politician that was involved in on trying to blow the whistle on this? Is he still very...
Well, that was Lawrence King, who was good friends with Ollie North.
Oh.
okay.
And Lawrence King sang the national anthem at both of Reagan's Republican conventions, presidential conventions.
I was wondering if that was him.
That was him. He's the baritone. He ripped off this SNL, but the credit union. But there's a lot more to it, because these guys were operatives for somebody else, and that somebody else was a guy named Warren Buffett.
Interesting. And I ran across him and something else that he was very much involved in.
He's in the newspapers every day. He's the richest man in the United States.
Right, right. But it was a particular corporation that I wasn't aware that he was that highly involved in. I don't know if he was just a large stock owner in it or...
Well, he's on the board of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, that was probably the one.
As a matter of fact, he was on the auditing committee, and he got in trouble because... because they were giving big bonuses to the executives, huge bonuses, you know. So he got in a little trouble over that. He was also involved with AIG, and some of his Buffett's people just went to prison for stock fraud over an AIG swindle, and you know about AIG.
Right, but there was the Capital, I'm trying to remember the name of it now, the Capital... it was like the holding company for the American funds.
See, the important thing is Warren Buffett's father was a senator. That was Howard Buffett. And during the war, he was a Nazi collaborator. He was also just a flaming right-winger, conservative.
And what did he do in regard to collaborating with the Nazis?
What he would do is pull strings in Washington to have things done on behalf of the Nazis covertly. That was his function. They had a lot of people in Washington, D.C. who were making connections, spying, you know, that sort of thing. And that's what Howard Buffett did.
Okay, but also...
He was also one of the first members of the John Birch Society, which was funded by money from the SS in Nazi Germany early on. And the Birch Society was anti-communist and stirred up some of his anti-communist fervor in the 1950s. Howard Buffett was a part of that. 40% of what the Nazis do is propaganda. And Howard Buffett was a propagandist. That's part of his function. That's why Warren Buffett is so well off today, because his daddy was so important to the Nazi Party.
I was getting, one of the first places that I got into was the AIG and the 9/11, and you get caught into the 9/11 tie-in with, well, it has a lot of tie-ins to various avenues, and then you got into the Comair crash.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And would you like to...
Warren Buffett was involved in that, too. Well, you know about AIG, because AIG was a part of the OSS during the war. They had files that were used as intelligence information because they insured people in Europe, and that intelligence information was used so that the military could decide where they were going to drop their bombs. So then after the war, that part of the OSS that was run by a guy named Cornelius Star becomes AIG, the insurance company.
And it seemed like they got big doing insurance over in China or something like that, wasn't it?
I'm not sure about. Yeah, I think that does ring a bell, but I don't remember the details.
Uh-huh.
But yes, that was a part of it.
Right.
It wasn't only China. There were other Asian countries where they were active.
Uh-huh.
And they still are.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. And then I got off onto a side story that was in a link off of yours, and it was somebody that got into the fact that was blowing the whistle on some of the annuity problems that was taking place. That I don't know if that it was direct with AIG. It was just, I believe, with the insurance, certain types of insurance contracts for annuities. And
that was probably Swiss Re, which is a reinsurance corporation.
Okay. Yeah. Are you familiar with the capital? I'm trying to think of the name of it. The capital. It won't come to my mind right now, darn it. But
Capital One?
No, it was the company that managed the American funds, and they were involved in reinsurance on the World Trade Center, which I was...
Oh, you're talking about Larry Silverstein and all that.
Well, right, but this...
See, that's part of the Warren Buffett's cabal there.
Really?
Yeah. They made money on the destruction of the World Trade Center that they knew was going to come down. I mean, I had a warning by telephone a week before it happened. A lot of people knew it was coming.
Yeah, I've heard all kinds of people that had some way of knowing in some form or fashion.
Right.
And what go into it a little bit on what you were aware of was going to happen.
911?
Right.
Well, I would refer you to, I have a series of articles called The Path to 911 that you can get to. I have links on all my websites and you can read all about it. Because it's a complicated subject. It's just the business end of it alone is just extremely complicated.
That's why it's so hard for me to even try to even name some of these names.
There were so many vested interests, right?
Right.
And what they were trying to pull off with 911 was not just the institution of parafascism in the United States, but the idea was to take the government and turn it, make it contractual. So you had just thousands of contractors out there who've benefited after 911, and that was the whole point. The NSA, for instance, has 2,600 different contractors doing its work.
Oh, my goodness.
And what does the NSA do? Only what they're told to do by charter, which is to overhear or to listen in on communications outside of the United States. By charter, they're not allowed to operate within the United States, right? But now the big scandal is the NSA is listening to all of our phone calls. Who's doing that? The contractors are doing that.
Yeah,
Blackwater benefited by it.
And is it that they're listening or that they're just recording, and then if they need it, they'll go get it?
Well, who knows? It depends on what their motive is for listening in. I mean, they can tie into your telephone, listen to you all the time, and the motive for listening to you isn't the same motive that they have for listening to someone, a student from the Middle East who's been talking about blowing up buildings. But you're also a problem. I mean, just writing a letter to the local newspaper and complaining about the government, the FBI will open a file on you. Right? So if you have a radio program, you become of interest if you're a dissident.
How thick is yours?
Well, I have these people on me every day.
I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. I need to do a station ID here. You're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, community-supported radio. And we are streamed on the Internet at KHEN.org. And if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest, they're available at www.givemesometruth.info or link from the khen.org website. And my co-host this evening is Katie O'Brien, and our special guest is Alex Constantine, getting into the the incredible journalistic work that and research that he does. And your websites again is
Alex Constantine's Blacklist.
Okay.
And I have the latest book is called Psychic Dictatorship in the USA 2, and that's available on DVD.
Oh, so that's a continuation of the first one then?
Uh-huh. 10 years later, I decided to do another one.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it was that I was just getting the one, and now in another one you had. Go ahead and name some of the other books that you've got, too. While you're
I did one called The Covert War Against Rock. London Observer rated that one of the 50 best books on music ever written, but it's never been reviewed in the United States. That's my last book between covers. I do it on DVDs now. Before that, I had a book called Virtual Government. Before that, Psychic Dictatorship in the USA. Before that, I had one called Blood, Carnage, and the Agent Provocateur. That's a little hard to get rid of, but that was my first book.
Okay.
And I've done a lot of publishing in the American press and so forth. But they become, you know, every place I go, some operation is mounted to get me out of there, so I keep moving around.
What do you consider one of the most intriguing stories you've ever done? Anything that comes to mind?
They all are. I mean, from the murder of John Lennon, you know, to Bob Marley, to the SNL ripoffs, you know. On and on. It's all fascinating to me. I can't think of anything more interesting.
That's why, I just sit in awe when I'm reading it.
Yeah, I might do something else, but I just can't tear myself away from it. I've tried.
Do you have any spare time?
In regard to the killing of John Lennon, mm-hmm. You, of course, have made this public. When do you think that the actual public out there will actually take this as a serious note in history?
Well, as long as they're getting the propaganda assault, they won't take anything seriously. But it's, read my chapter and it's all very self-evident. The operation was called Operation Walrus. They planted people in his household. They were stealing his files systematically, piece by piece, so that they could use that information to discredit him. The whole idea was to create the perception, the common perception that John Lennon was a phony, right? And then someone crying that John Lennon is a phony walks up and blows him away. His chauffeur was a guy named Fred Siegelman, something like that. And he was stealing the files. They had file cabinets full of poems and letters and song lyrics and such that had been written by Lennon. And he didn't even understand it. He was being ripped off and set up. And the murder just capped it all off. After Lennon was dead, there were, I would say, 5 attempts on Ono's life. She's scared to death and won't even talk about this stuff.
Yeah, because that was never released to the public, was it?
What's that?
That Ono had death threats?
No. People don't know about that. It's not reported. But they tried to set her up. They arranged appointments. People invaded the Dakota in order to shoot her. You know, and the bodyguard stopped them. All this stuff going on, and it's never reported.
So what was the reason behind them doing all this then?
Because Lennon was anybody who comes along and has can make an impression, can influence millions of minds the way he could. There's also a deeper motive, and that is the lady who was my mentor, Mae Brussel, spent a week with him indoctrinating him in all the things I'm talking about now. So he had knowledge of fascism in the United States that was above and beyond the average person by far.
Yeah, I got a little chance to go on to a website that has her some of her recordings and just get a little bit familiar with the lady because she was totally new to me before
mm-hmm.
I had run across you. So she was kind of like someone preceding even precede William Cooper or somebody like that, didn't she?
William Cooper was in nothing. he was the other side. He was a fascist intelligence agent.
Was he really?
Yeah.
in regard to Major
Two Russell, times over, Naval and Air Force Intelligence.
Well,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
In regard to Mae Bressel, do you think her death was a natural one, or it was promoted by some organization?
Well, I have one reason to suspect that she may have been murdered, and that was that her cancer was so acted so quickly. Her doctor said he'd never seen a cancer spread that quickly to a human body. And before you knew it, she was dead, which makes me suspicious. And there had some strange things going on there, too. She had a phone call tipping her off that a house was going to be built across the street from her. And 30 days later, the tractors pull up, they start building this house. And when it's done, two men move in. She goes across the street to borrow a cup of sugar just to get a look at the house. Somebody comes to the door and opens it. There's no furniture in the house. There's just a big tape recorder in the middle of the living room. Right? And she was told it would be CIA and they'd be spying on her, which is seems to be what was going on. She had the FBI living on the other side of her house. Right? And she had just all kinds of trouble. They murdered her daughter.
You know, how do you weed through all these, when you're talking about people like William Cooper and that sort? I mean, the mm-hmm. whole, the media is just full of people like that then.
Yeah, they are. If you're looking for alternatives, they're waiting for you there too.
Right. And trying to weed through the ones that, I mean, there's things that made me wonder about him, but I never... I mean, I wasn't a big follower of her, so I'm not as up on why, other than the fact that his past that is a good clue, you know. If
right.
But coming from the intelligence and that sort, so.
Mm-hmm. And if they're talking aliens, you know, write them off. You don't want anything to do with them.
And why is that?
That's because that's a tool. The aliens are a cover story for the vehicles that they fly around. They're advanced vehicles. The Pentagon has technology 50 years in advance of the most advanced things that you're aware of. That's called the black budget.
And can you give us an example of that?
Yeah, the so-called UFOs are a classic example. They started out as Foo Fighters during World War II. The British took one of them, put it in a wind tunnel, started playing around with the design, realized that the wraparound design worked best in the wind tunnel. They brought over American engineers who began to tinker with it. They started a factory up in Canada, started to build prototypes. First one crashes in 1947 in Washington State. It's retrieved by the Air Force, but as the officers who took the pieces away get on the plane to fly back to Dayton, Ohio, to Wright-Patterson, the plane blows up in midair. That was determined to be sabotage. You can begin from that point and trace their history up to 1960 when they begin to use electronic mind control on the subjects, wipe out their memories. You saw it in Men in Black, the instrument that wipes out short-term memory.
Mm-hmm.
They actually had that. CIA perfected it in 1959. And that's called electronic dissolution of memory. So you could pull off the perfect crime, kidnap somebody, do medical experimentation on them, flash them with dissolution of memory, wipe out a short-term memory, and then they use a hypnotic process and told the subject that when he wakes up, he's going to remember a little green man, and that's what he remembers when he wakes up.
So
if you've ever seen a stage hypnotist,
yeah,
put somebody through the paces, well, if you took the subject and told him you remember little green men, what do you think that guy would remember? Little green men.
So is this part of the techniques that they used with Mark Chapman?
They used mind control on the guy, yes. But you're familiar with MKUltra?
Yes.
Okay, well, MKUltra ends in 1963, and then it goes operational. And that's why you had a Mark David Chapman. Everything they learned between 1947 and 1963, they put to use in the field after 1963. That's why Sirhan Sirhan to this day can't remember shooting Robert Kennedy, because he was in a state of hypnosis.
So did you say where the Foo Fighters came from?
Yeah, they were used in Nazi Germany. A Foo Fighter was an unmanned vehicle. It was remote controlled and had an electrostatic generator inside of it. then you would fly this thing within 1,000 yards of a bombing squadron that was going to bomb Berlin, and this thing, the generator inside would knock out the engines of the airplanes, the Allied planes, and they'd crash.
Hmm.
What's the big factor that in UFOlogy? UFO comes over your house, what does it do? It knocks out the electronics. They still do it. Because basically they're Foo Fighters with wraparound wings.
Now, every time they knock out the electricity, is that something they do by choice or just something that happens due to the technology?
That's a basic part of the design.
So it's not like they can turn it on and turn it off. It is always on?
Pretty much it's always on. If they get close to anything, it's going to knock out the electronics. And you see that in Steven Spielberg movies, you know. But everything I'm telling you is documented. You know, I just peel this stuff off, right? But it all comes from hard research. And you can find these things yourself. Nobody chooses to do that because they're too tuned in to, you know, celebrities and that kind of thing. Bill O'Reilly.
Well, you mentioned that anything that they actually have is like 30 years beyond...
50 years.
50 years beyond what they are showing us?
Yeah.
So their actual UFO cover-up is actually something that people actually think are UFOs just because they're not aware of the technology being there, kind of like the stealth fighter.
You know, here's a good experiment. You go to the library and pick up U.S. News and World Report from 1950 and page through it, and you're going to find pictures of these saucers in there. And you're going to find the Air Force working on them. And you'll find that they're very advanced and that they have picture, photographs of prototypes and all that. All that disappeared in the mid-1950s. And then the alien cover story was installed.
But there were many alien or UFO sightings prior to 1950.
Were there?
Yes.
The first crash was in 1947. That was the very first sighting.
If you go back to other type information...
That's all this Nazi BS.
Thank you.
Well, no, there's some that actually came out of the 1890s, too.
Yeah.
That's BS, too. You're getting hit with propaganda from all directions. They'll tell you anything, and it doesn't mean it's true. Look at this cave wall. It has a flying saucer in it. You know, no, it just has religious imagery, you know. It's not a flying saucer.
Well, I know that some of the animal mutilations here in Colorado...
Let's not even talk about this.
Okay.
You know, I didn't come on the air to talk about UFOs.
Okay.
See, this is where they discredit people.
No,
they're government machines.
They're government machines. Have nothing to do with aliens. We've got SETI radar dishes around the world pointing into outer space. They haven't picked up one intelligence signal.
They're all earthbound.
They're all earthbound because they're made here. So let's, you know, forget aliens. There's no such thing.
Yeah, we should call them...
The aliens that they give us are what? Grays and blondes. What are the blondes? Nazis. Because Nazis early on were identified by some of the subjects. Nazi doctor picked me up and experimented on me. This is before they had... You know, the mind control down solid enough that they could plant memories.
Well, let's talk about the mind control a little bit more. Under one of your articles, it's one of your books that you wrote about the mind control. What would you like our audience to know about that?
It depends on what kind of mind control you're talking about.
One of your books was the CIA mind control operations in America.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you mean assassinations or mass mind control?
Yes, mass mind control.
Well, that's the media. That's what I was talking about, the mass persuasion studies.
And is there anybody that was particularly involved in that?
Particularly involved in that? University of Michigan was very involved in it.
Interesting. Any particular names that come out of that from that university that would have been that... research or...
On mass mind control?
Yeah.
You can look at it. I read that stuff 20 years ago.
Okay.
You know, what I'm telling you now is pretty much a dim memory. But there is a good book on it by Simpson, his name is.
Okay.
And it's all about, that's just one of the universities identified.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I could give you the title, but again, you know, we're going back a ways here in my research.
Where does would Stanford have been involved in it much?
Oh, yeah, very, very much so, right from the beginning.
How about MIT?
Basically, any Ivy League educational institution was involved.
Okay.
Harvard still is deeply.
Okay.
Boston Hospital, you know, they were doing experiments there. Any Ivy League institution, which is why they had to get it off the campus, and maybe that's what I should explain here. As I mentioned, MKUltra ends in, it's an experimental program. And the experiments were done in Ivy League colleges around the country. Yale was a part of it. And then the New York Times comes around and starts asking questions about these mind control experiments they're hearing about. So they have to get it off the campus. So what do? The CIA scratches his head and decides that what they're going to do is go out and co-opt and create a number of religious organizations. One of those was the People's Temple. Jim Jones?
Okay, right.
Okay, Jim Jones was had been raised as a Nazi from an early age. His father was in the KKK. Right. At the age of 5, he was killing the pets of his friends and having funeral orations over their bodies. He combed his hair like Adolf Hitler. And he was a fascist from an early age. So he's recruited by the CIA, and the agency gives him all the files they have on mind control up to that point. And then they tell Jim Jones to go out in the field and use it. So he starts up a church, and that church becomes a means of doing mind control experiments on the flock, on parishioners in the People's Temple. They emptied out a mental institution, basically of black people, and they became members of the People's Temple because at that time Jim Jones was a housing commissioner in San Francisco, right? And anybody who would join the church would get a free house, thanks to the housing commissioner. And then they have their subjects for experimentation. He takes them down to Guyana. The land there was leased by an attorney for I.G. Farben, which is the company that owned Auschwitz, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And they set up a concentration camp there and stuffed it full of these subjects that they were using. They would take kids. The head of the lead doctor at Jonestown was from UCLA. And he was a psychologist. He'd take children and put them in coffins and bury them alive and then pull them up 5 hours later and then study the trauma, you see. Trauma is very much a part of mind control experimentation. When the whole thing was exposed, they just killed everybody. 70% of them were injected with poison under the shoulder blade. Another 30% were shot, and the poison in the Kool-Aid wasn't enough. If you drank a glass of it, it would just make you sick. It wouldn't kill you. There wasn't that much poison in it. Those people were all murdered.
Well, there were a few that escaped, correct?
Yes.
Was that real, or was that just a propaganda?
Anybody who lived through it, some of them did escape, and they were just, you know, subjects that got the hell out of there. But basically, anybody who lived after that was a part of it. Jim Jones, you know, the People's Temple was basically comprised of black people, but the inner core was white. And the inner core was made up of people with ties to military intelligence and human experimentation.
Who was the doctor that was involved on that? Do you know?
The doctor?
Mm-hmm.
The psychologist?
Right.
I'm sorry, I forget his name. I wrote that in 1993.
Okay.
And that's part of the problem that I have is, talking about the research I've done 15 years ago, and to get it in detail, it's a little difficult. But that information is there on the Internet. Just do a search for my name and anything you hear.
So was the Jim Jones in Guyana actually like an experiment?
Oh, and that information on that psychologist, that's from a book by a guy named Ken Wooden, and the book was called The Children of Jonestown. So just look up that book.
Okay.
There's a whole book on it.
Okay, now on your website, I did notice that you have other authors on there, too. So is this like a it is a compilation of related stories? Is that kind of what what you're
doing? My website? No, it's just all over the place.
Okay.
Although, if something fits with something else, I'd give it a link.
Okay.
So there's a lot of it. There's just a lot to know. I mean, I have 4,000 articles on that blog alone.
Well, it's just that when you think you're doing a lot of researching and learning a lot, and then you find that, you know, you've been kind of going down one alley, and
there's so much to know. And they're waiting for you. You know, if you realize you're being lied to and you start looking for answers, they're waiting. You know, you'll go to the wrong place and they'll give you the wrong information. You'll be more confused than ever.
And I think it's actually so bombarded with information that they don't want you to weed through it. They want to bury it at a level that it's just not even able to get to.
For every book I write, there must be 500 that are just propaganda. They're all over the Internet.
True. Would you be willing to talk a bit about Laura Knight?
I don't recognize the name.
No, okay.
Who's Laura Knight?
Well, it was Laura Knight. I couldn't pronounce it.
Jadzisic.
Pardon me?
Laura Knight Jadzisic.
Oh, her, yes. Okay. Her last name is Jadzik, I guess.
Jadzik? Okay.
Yeah, I first became aware of her. I was working with other 911 researchers, and she came along talking about Jews behind the 911, behind 911. And I just thought it was nonsense, and I made some crack about her being a Nazi. And then she claimed that I was a government agent, and you know, I was harassing her and all this. And I hadn't done a thing to her. So I began to look into who this woman was. And basically what she does is bash Jewish people. She's extremely anti-Semitic. And she blames them for everything. She claims they control the media and all that. And she's just another Nazi, but she pretends to be a researcher like me. You see my point?
Yes.
And there's just a whole lot of that out there.
Well, that again is where some of that blurring comes from, because the ones that are accusing someone of being the opposite are the ones...
You're just being manipulated, that's all.
So, okay.
And she's an occultist. She's into channeling spirits. And that's very much in the spirit of the early Nazi party, which was the very first 12 Nazis were occultists.
And that was what I was listening to a little bit on Mae Brussels, was talking about some of the occult.
Mm-hmm.
And
because they're recruited from the occult secret societies in Germany.
And does that go back to the Thule and the...
Yes, it does.
Okay.
I mean, the very concept of Aryan, there's no such thing as an Aryan Superman, but they had this mythological past, and that came up through the occult journals. One of them was called the Astra, and that was a occult magazine. Hitler had every single copy of that magazine.
Hmm.
And that's where the Aryan stuff comes from. It's all occultism.
And why do you think that they got into that so heavily?
Well, it's, like I said, they were recruiting from the occult societies, and I think the reason was because they were so deeply derationalized, they could be controlled. They could, you know, their minds could be programmed. And I think that's basically why there's a crossover. If you're that irrational, you can be manipulated.
Now, where did fascism originate?
Mussolini. That's why I discussed him in the beginning.
Okay, all right, but you
there was no such thing until the 1920s when Mussolini conceived fascism. The word fascism comes from the word fasces, which is a strange-looking axe with a lot of poles strapped to it.
Right.
And another meaning is group. It's our group, secret group. What they do is covert operations.
Okay, but you had corporations that have, I mean, corporations haven't just start acting like they and being that involved in government and control back in the at that time period. They've been doing it for quite a while, had they not?
Yeah, I explained about the rise of the destruction of the muckrakers and propaganda in the media before the CIA. Yes, they've had their interests and they acted on those interests even before fascism came along.
And would there have been, and so, and how about in the 1800s?
There was proto-fascism.
Okay.
And I explained all that in the 1800s, the rise of industrialization, right, protecting their own interests. Fascism is a response to communism, basically. It's rich people who fear the loss of their wealth and privilege. So they create a private army, which is the fascist Nazis, who are out there working for the rich, basically. Rich wanted slave labor, so they used Jews in Nazi Germany. They even extracted the gold in their teeth. This is all about boosting the bottom line of their profits.
And was removing the gold in their teeth just something to torture them, or
no.
They really want the gold?
They wanted the gold. They're going to exploit this human being for everything he's got. They took his property. They took paintings on his wall. Right? They took the gold out of his teeth. There was even a car company using hair, human hair, to stuff their car seats.
Now, did the
corporations haven't changed a bit. You still have pharmaceutical companies who put dangerous products out there, and then they have ghostwriters filling the journal full of praise for this product when it's killing people. That's fascism.
Now, are they as likely to put out books on where they're going and what they plan on doing, like they have in the communists have?
You pretty much have to figure that out for yourself.
Well, I was just
there's no publication out there that's going to tell you this stuff. There's one thing they don't teach on college campuses, that's fascism. Because if they did, you'd understand that you live right in the middle of it.
Okay. But the tendencies and everything are pretty much indoctrinated, are they not, once you get into the system?
Oh, sure.
Okay, right.
I mean, if you turn on TV, you're getting a full dose of it. That's one reason I haven't watched television for 10 years.
Well, I don't see how you'd have time.
I wouldn't want to. It just makes me cringe.
I got into a little bit of, heavily into the Hunt family. And
yes.
I was following that thread.
Right.
And the one that surprised me a little bit was, and I hadn't run across her name so much, maybe that's just because that's not in the vein that I run, but was Carolyn Hunt, and which...
Right. Yeah, the whole family's involved.
Right.
One has a radio show, that may be Carolyn.
Uh-huh.
They own sporting teams, football teams, you know, oil companies.
And how far back do they reach?
The Hunt family?
Mm-hmm.
Back to H.L. Hunt, you know, famous figure.
Mm-hmm.
The day that Kennedy was assassinated, he already had a page in the local newspaper with a big black border around it saying that Kennedy needed to be killed.
Interesting. But there was no relation between him and E. Howard Hunt?
No.
Okay.
Different families.
Right. And as far as, because they had a bunch of kids in that family too.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a stepfather that must have worked with him because he spoke about him quite a bit when I was.
That's
younger.
Hunt Oil you're talking about, the oil company.
Right, right. And it wasn't ketchup or anything like that. So, what are they up to now? Are they still just doing the oil and having the football team? Is that it still?
That's a good question. I have caught glimpses of them here and there.
Uh-huh.
But they're still around. They're just not, you know, H.L. Hunt isn't the big motivating factor he used to be. He used to fund right-wing organizations, Nazi fronts, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
They're not quite as conspicuous as they used to be.
Well, they seem to be fairly...
Right. You know where they are? It's in something called the Council for National Policy, which is just this evil, religious, right-wing organization. That's all the major right-wing evangelists are part of it, and they're very secret, and, you know, they have a lot to do with the mass persuasion out there through religion.
And they funded a lot of the think tanks and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I understand. Yeah, and I, that's where I was fixing to go with it, was because I'd never heard of it until about this time last year.
Yeah, they're even worse than the Coors family, actually.
Well, the Coors is in it.
It's pretty much the same idea.
Yeah. Yeah, it, I mean, I'd seen a list of the names that were involved on it
mm-hmm.
from back in the 90s, and then they quit releasing, you know, openly releasing their memberships, and though you found Oliver North and even Larry Pratt and some people like that involved in it that you didn't necessarily would have put in it, except that sometimes I have to wonder, and when you see these lists of names, if some of these people may have gotten involved with it and didn't necessarily find out until later exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause essentially it sounded like a very, a lot of religious leadership. I'm trying to think of the name of the lady that is one of the most significant characters in that group.
But both those, the Coors and the Hunt family, were very involved with the CIA. And then there's...
CIA or CNP?
CIA.
Oh, okay.
And then there's an early Mockingbird. What was his name? He was behind the so-called vast right-wing conspiracy. What was his name? I'm sorry, on the East Coast in Pennsylvania. Another rich family doing the same thing, funding these far-right organizations. The Hunt family funded Liberty Lobby. Are you familiar with them?
No, I'm not.
That was run by a guy named Willis Carto, who was a flaming anti-Semite, you know, Nazi propagandist. And they were involved in the Kennedy assassination.
Well, that's what's so interesting when you do start getting into your... blogs here, because you do start finding, you know, how one person's connected to another, and unless you start looking, one of my favorite places to go start looking for connections is just to start looking at the board of directors on different organizations. And
can you hold on just a second? I want to tell this person to call back.
Okay. And so this is KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado. And
okay, I'm back.
Okay. So, go ahead, Katie. Can you got any more questions here? You're the best one at it tonight.
Well, in regard to the board of directors, on some of these organizations, whether it be H.L. Hunt or Coors, most of this is online. But how do you go about researching the individuals? Because of the amount of propaganda out there, how do you really find the truth?
Well, you just gather everything you can. I mean, if I want to know about somebody, I'll do a Google search, and about half of what you want to know is going to be on the Internet. And then you start sorting out the propaganda from reality. And that just comes, you know, as you work through it. And then I'm lucky because I have the UCLA Research Library down the street.
Oh, you're lucky.
With about 13 million holdings, and I can go down there and do the rest of my research there. And that's the way it balances out. About 50% comes from that. So, you know, it's really good to have both, a good library and the Internet at your fingertips. And then you just pick a name, and you find everything you can on that person. If you want to know about Michael Jackson's connections to the Mafia, start with that. You'll find his manager was a guy named Frank DeLeo, who says there's no such thing as the Mafia. It's all a media creation. And then one of his best friends is a guy named Al Melnick, who is close to Meyer Lansky, who I started out talking about. So you find those Mafia connections, and you research both those guys, find out their past, what they're involved in business, you know, who their friends are and so forth. And it'll take you a little while, but you'll come out with a complete picture.
When I'm looking at the article you have on the Kennedy assassination, whatever. Now, who did you come up saying was involved in on that?
Okay, at the very top you had a general who was actually a German, and his name was Wiedenbach, Kurt Wiedenbach. But he comes to the United States. He changes his name to Charles Willoughby, and he becomes Charles MacArthur's chief of intelligence. And he actually got us into the Korean War because he was sending false reports of Chinese aggression to the New York Times, which was publishing these things, and managed to provoke the Korean War. After that, he becomes head of a secret society called the Knights of Malta in Shikshini, New York, which isn't the real Knights of Malta. It's a secret society patterned after the Vatican secret society. And out of that group comes a guy named Corso, who's out there feeding a lot of nonsense about alien technology.
Is that Philip Corso?
Philip Corso. That's what I was talking about. These guys are Nazis, right, talking about aliens. It's just a cover story. He comes out of that organization. But the assassination was led by this guy, Willoughby Wiedenbach, General MacArthur's chief of intelligence. The staff under General MacArthur, the intelligence staff under Willoughby, comes to the United States and starts up Aryan Nations.
Okay.
You're familiar with them?
Oh, now, is that the one that's the Nazi?
Those are neo-Nazis.
Neo-Nazis, right.
Right. And they're out there recruiting and passing out their poisonous literature and so forth. And that's where it comes from MacArthur's intelligence staff, right? And the head of that was Charles Willoughby, who was directing the assassination. And what he did, he was a military strategist. And what he did is he had operatives out there doing things to implicate themselves. You had G.H.W. Bush reporting to the FBI that he had overheard a conversation of students at the University of Texas talking about killing Kennedy. Okay? Well, that sounds bad, and that's a route for investigation, so you go that way. In New Orleans, there was a group that turns up in that movie JFK,
mm-hmm.
doing all sorts of suspicious things, right? So you begin looking there. Then you had Traficante in Florida buying guns and talking about killing Kennedy. A guy walks into a bank and fires his gun at the ceiling and says, they're going to kill Kennedy, right? So you go investigating that way. In Chicago, there was a group of Latinos who were talking about killing Kennedy and buying guns, right? That just came up a couple years ago in the press. So you learn about that, you begin investigating there. What you don't realize is that they're all just decoys.
Okay, so in other words, they just have us looking about 10 different directions, and so...
You pick up a thread somewhere, and it may lead to Cuba, or it may lead to the KGB, right? Or it could lead to students at the University of Texas, right? None of them were involved in the assassination. Everybody who was involved in the assassination had a very small part in it. And that's what you also find with 911, is that it's hundreds of people all doing one very little step. They didn't know what the overall picture was, and you couldn't prosecute them. Right? Everybody's on a need-to-know basis, and nobody knows anything. But there's an internal group here that's in Dallas that pulls the triggers, right? And they're hard to find. And who is directing them? Charles Willoughby.
Okay, now, when it comes down to the... But he wasn't the one that would have pulled the gun. So,
no,
yeah.
He didn't shoot any bullets. He just moved the pieces around, the chess pieces.
Okay.
Oswald goes off to Japan to learn how to fire a gun, and then he ends up in Russia because he defects, and then he comes back to the United States. That's one piece being manipulated.
Mm-hmm. Now, was he not a decoy?
He was a decoy. He even said he was.
Okay,
he said he was a patsy.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And he understood what he was and what his part was.
Okay, no, and was the mafia involved in it?
The mafia did not kill Kennedy. That's a cover story. A lot of people believe that because they turn on the History Channel and that's what they're told. But that is not so. They were just chess pieces.
And so in your research then, did you didn't uncover, you know, who would have been the one that would have done the shooting then? Is that
They ended up dead shortly thereafter, along with about 100 other people who knew things. I was telling you about Phil Graham blowing his head off. He knew things, you see. He had to go. So he was programmed to shoot to blow his head off.
So ultimately, even whether you're involved in corporate fraud or whatever, you start finding a lot of bodies running around in any of this stuff if you're involved in it, even if it's just a little tiny part.
Oh, yeah, they kill more of their own than they kill of us. I mean, they'll send us off to war to die, but, You know, they're covering up all the time. And they're targets, and those targets make a statement. Like Paul Wellstone, you know, I gave a speech at Washington, D.C. to the black congressional caucus one time. And somebody walked up afterwards and told me that, you know, there's deep fear in Congress. And I say, why is that? Because of what happened to Paul Wellstone. For a long time, Democrats were afraid to make a peep because they had the example of Paul Wellstone. And there's just a lot of them. I mentioned the very first CIA assassination. That was George Polk, who was a reporter for CBS.
Right, right. But they've done plenty more since then.
Oh, sure.
Right.
And more all the time, because as we approach an open fascist rule, they're, you know, eliminating anybody who can be a problem.
And who, in your opinion, was responsible for manipulating the JFK assassination?
Well, that's, I think...
I just answered that.
Yeah, he just told you.
Charles Willoughby.
I missed it. Oh.
Charles Willoughby, his real name was Kurt Wiedenbach. When he was working for MacArthur, he wore a monocle, like a German prince or something, you know.
Mm-hmm. I find it interesting that he was able to start up a pseudo Knights of Malta.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Unofficial branch of the Knights of Malta. And Corso came out of there.
And there is an original Knights of Malta. Right.
Yes, there is. They go back, you know, just, I don't know how many thousands of years, 2,000 years. Actually, they were there in the 11th century. They were part of invading the Middle East for the Vatican. They're a military organization, basically. That's how they were set up.
Now, I've heard often that, like Georgetown has trains a lot of the foreign people that go over to the foreign service, I guess.
Right, Georgetown is like the CIA university.
Okay, right. So, then you can kind of start picking out what they may be involved in just by their schooling.
Yeah, and this foreign service thing, that's a cover for intelligence operations.
Okay. Right. And so as far as the, you got into somewhat on, who was it, the URS and Washington, the Washington group in one of the, I read so many of your articles now, I'm losing track of which one that was tied to.
I don't know what the URS is. I don't know.
Okay. Well, that was it's they're who ended up buying out Washington Group, so they just kind of moved upward, and I don't know what it stands for. But anything else that we can cover here that doesn't get too confusing for those of us that are still trying to sort it out? Now that I'm trying to rearrange my brain after. Looking at things in a little bit different light.
Well, Alex, who do you think was manipulating the 9/11 incident?
That is such a big subject, and it's one I don't even like to get into.
Okay.
Because people have their own little corner of the universe with their own beliefs about 9/11, and will attack anyone who contradicts what they believe. So I don't even like to open that one up. All I say is go to my website, read The Path to 9/11. That is about 24 chapters, right, that tells you all about it. And it's all documented. It's, you know, you can't argue with it. And it pretty much gives you the corporate end of 9/11.
And your website is Alex Constantine Blacklist.
Right, that's one of them. That's
Alex,
the main
there
one.
They can get to all your other information.
Right. All the links are there. I've got about 4,000 articles posted at that site. Maybe 3,000 at the anti-fascist research bin. And you can be busy for a long time.
Well, yeah.
Okay, now, how did you get, what got you into the, or did you cover it when you got into the Larry Franklin thing? Was it from the child prostitution, or was it from the other connection that we
had? I don't know who Larry Franklin is.
I keep wanting to say that.
Larry King.
Larry King.
That's the Franklin King. It's named after the Franklin Credit Union.
I'm sorry, that's a throwback to something in my past.
Okay. Larry King was a baritone who sang at both of Reagan's conventions.
Uh-huh.
Ripped off for 43, I think it was actually the total was $48 million that disappeared. And he did end up going to prison for a short while over that one.
But was that child thing at all related to the Father Flanagan's thing, or was it?
Yeah, Boys Town.
Okay.
That was a part of it.
Okay, because I thought it was, because, you know, it just seemed like you used to see that name everywhere, and then it just kind of died out. And
yeah, there was a heavy child molestation angle to that story.
Right, but it seems that... With that, and then it ties into the McMartin. Is that the name of
it? It doesn't tie into it, but it's another case.
Oh, okay.
McMartin is one of the preschool cases. It's so-called ritual abuse, which was a front for mind control. And the media handled that so that you would dismiss it.
Okay, now was Aquino involved with that?
Aquino was up in San Francisco. He was part of the Presidio military base.
Uh-huh.
And he had high rank in the Pentagon. He had security clearance and so forth. And he was identified by a little girl who took the police to his house and said she'd been molested there. And she described the inside of his bedroom and everything. But the military stepped in, covered everything up. You know, it's all sealed information. In the end, he was drummed out of the Army in a secret hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Army believed the allegations against him, that he had been molesting children.
Okay, now...
He's a Satanist, ran a satanic cult called the Temple of Set. I've got a long, long article about him on my website.
And he was at, did you say, out of the Presidio?
Yeah, Presidio military base.
Okay, now does he have a tie-in with Gorbachev?
The Gorbachev Foundation set up after the Presidio closed down.
Okay.
No, he's not a part of that.
Okay.
He moved on after that. He got drummed out of the Army.
Okay. All right.
And then he disappeared. I don't know where he is now. I hear rumors, but I don't know where he is.
Okay. And of all the, when you got into your rock, your rock musicians and that sort.
Right. It's coming out now that Jimi Hendrix was murdered after all. You know, the press has been lying to us all these years, but they're starting to admit that he was murdered.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of that's because of the pressure I'm putting on him.
Oh.
That there's a book out now by a roadie. It's plagiarized. It's taken from my work.
Uh-huh.
It says that Jimi Hendrix was drowned. He was waterboarded.
Okay.
They took a gallon of wine, forced it down his throat until his lungs were filled with wine, and he drowned to death. That was the death of Jimi Hendrix. It had nothing to do with a heroin overdose, which is what the press told you. There was no heroin in his blood.
Okay, what about Jim Morrison?
Jim Morrison, I kind of end up there indecisive, because I do believe that he was murdered, but it can't be proven. He supposedly died of his heart stopped.
Yeah.
But there was blood. His nose was bleeding because he had a brain hemorrhage, you know. So it's really hard to prove anything because the autopsy was secret. You can't get the results from it. It's just hard to nail down.
And Belushi?
Belushi was murdered.
And
Mae Brussels did that one.
And how about Lenny Bruce?
There was a conspiracy against him when he was alive. I don't know about his death. I can have suspicions, but if I can't prove it, I won't say so.
I was reading your article on
it. I mean, I can prove that Peter Tosh was murdered because he was shot, right? Mm-hmm. One guy goes to prison, a local, goes to prison after an 11-minute trial, but the other two got away. Who were the other two? They were American cops from New York City. They were allowed to get on a plane and leave the country, and they disappeared.
So
that one I can say he was murdered, and it was a political hit. It was the same with Bob Marley, but it's a little more complicated.
So there's not really tie-ins with these guys. It's just that they had there was reasons that they had to they wanted to get rid of them.
Yeah, I mean the CIA at the time that Marley was in his prime. The CIA was very active there in Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
And he was telling people to stand up for their rights. You know, he had to go.
So
you don't want people standing up for their rights.
It's
They flooded, the CIA flooded the island with heroin. And the Rastafarian movement, you know, was vulnerable to that. So that's why Marley came out talking about smoking marijuana. He wanted people to smoke marijuana as an alternative to heroin, because he knew it was the CIA's heroin. And that heroin ended up destroying the Rastafarian movement. A year later, it was dead. We saw the same process with LSD here in the United States. Destabilized the anti-war movement.
And that was brought about by, I mean, who was behind all
that? By the CIA's LSD.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, was there any particular person in leadership?
Well, there was a branch of the CIA that did it. The Science and Technology branch. They did that.
Okay, and does that tie in also in
they
the
took, they had a secret ingredient for LSD and another one called STP, and they published recipes for making the stuff in public journals. So hippies got a hold of it, started making their own LSD, you know, and the anti-war movement began to dissolve due to drugs.
Is that what has happened with the crystal meth?
Yeah.
Same type. So there's.
I mean, you can look
type.
At it year after year. Look at the drugs that are on the streets. They're always coming from where the CIA is operating. When the CIA was in Afghanistan, we had Afghan hash all over the place. Then they moved to Latin America, we had cocaine. You see?
Okay, but what's going on now with us over in Afghanistan now? Is.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, they're over there now, and we're getting the heroin.
Okay.
So
we blame it on the Taliban, but the CIA makes more money on that heroin than the Taliban does.
Now, is there a tie-in at all there, too, with the, you know, with the drugs and possibly with your, like, the oil that's in that, you know, in the regions around?
Wherever there's oil, there's not just drugs. There's going to be all kinds of problems. And you see that in Africa. Death squad activity.
And do you get into the eugenics that seems to be...
Yeah, we were... You know how the Nazis believed deeply in racial eugenics? They got it from us. That was an organization called the Pioneer Fund, which you should look up. The Pioneer Fund's still around. They're the ones who had that that the welfare legislation that was pushed through about 10 years ago. They were behind that.
That's a mutual fund, too.
The backlash against affirmative action, that's being pushed in the balloting by the Pioneer Fund, which is financing these ballot measures.
It's one of the oldest.
To turn back affirmative action. They're the ones who preached that, you know, back in the 1930s they were teaching that the Jews were an inferior race, and the Germans were eating up that propaganda, and it became part of the Nazi, you know, ideology.
Because, I mean, and that's one that's tied to the mutual fund that started in 1924 then.
I'm not familiar with mutual fund, you mean.
Well, because you're saying, I'm just wondering, because that's called the Pioneer Fund. And
yeah, the Pioneer Fund.
Right. And so that's why I'm going to have to do a little more.
But it's just, you know, it's basically a propaganda operation. It's not about loaning money or anything like that.
No, I wasn't saying that, but it could have been raising money along that line.
They do that. They raise money.
Okay.
For a racist agenda.
I guess I'm going to have to...
And there are a lot of people into that sort of thing.
Well, it seems to be quite a bit of that. And so as far as... You know, get into your music just a little bit before.
Oh, no. You don't need to go there.
Okay, all right. Well, we won't go there then. I just thought you know, you might want to go there, so I just brought it up.
It's a passion of mine, you know, but it's not going to change the world, you know.
Okay.
And once again, they can reach that on your website, correct?
Yes. I have a site called Alex Constantine's Musica, where I have some of my music posted. And periodically, I'll put some on my website.
And so as far as after all this time and all this digging and research and that sort that you do, have you come out with any kind of, you know, what has this proved to you or brought to you, or do you have any kind of, you know, what can people do with that information? I mean, what is your purpose, I guess, in doing all this?
I want to stop it. I mean, I have the audacity to believe that I can. And, you know, it's just, I told you a story about the oil company in Guatemala, the CIA planes coming in with napalm and the Indians. I'm deeply offended by that.
Right.
I mean, I remember when I was, you know, 10 years old and I first saw a documentary on television about the Holocaust. I mean, I was just horrified. You know, it's just so deeply repulsive that I cannot just sit still. It's a part of the American system and the American mind. It has to be stopped. They're killing the planet, for God's sake. We're heating up. You know, who's to say where it stops?
And how can we, as voters or as citizens of the planet, stop this?
That is, you accept your responsibility as a citizen. No one's willing to do that. You know, you have people waving flags and calling themselves patriots when, in fact, they're committing treason.
And how so?
What you do is learn. You read and read and read until you understand what's going on, right? And it's your responsibility to do it. People used to know that. Now it's about hedonism, about making yourself happy and comfortable. And believe me, you're going to regret that in the end with the system that you end up with.
Well, one of the things that kind of became apparent when I was looking through your work is about how embedded, you know, the fascism is into our monetary system and how we function as a...
Well, it's always been there.
What
this,
now?
This is true.
And
you know, they control the monetary system. There's fascists controlling it. But they, you know, it's the same people who are controlling everything else.
Right, and being able to step outside and start, you know, realizing that or changing the course of it is not necessarily an easy factor when you have I mean here I have been, you know, thinking that I've been doing all this research and starting to understand things, and then I find out again that I'm, you know, I have to step back and look at things again and try to get a different perspective on what's going on.
Right. It takes about 3 years of hard work before you have a foundation to begin.
Right. And then some, because I've been doing it a little bit longer than that, and I'm still, they're just overwhelming at times. But
it is. But you don't have to do it all. You know, you pick an area that you're interested in and work that area.
Right. Well,
so your advice is to pick an area and work that area, get educated, and to accept your responsibility as a citizen.
Exactly. No one's willing to do that. It's easy to wave a flag, you know, and, you know, pretend that you love your freedom and so forth, but you got to love it enough to fight for it. And I don't see anyone willing to do that. They'll take orders, they'll march off to war and die. In Vietnam, no one even knew what they were dying for. You know, we killed 28 million Vietnamese. What did we accomplish?
Wow, I've never.
What good does it do you to not know? You
well,
know?
Once again, as you mentioned earlier, it was about making money and promoting the wars without really having a focus or an outcome or an exit plan. We don't have an exit plan now.
We're a warfare state. We conduct these wars just for the sake of making war and profiting from it.
And
the world is a chessboard. You see, it's all geopolitics. And what they realize now is that there are points on the world that are important for resource control. So we try to control those points on the globe. Iraq was one of those points, not because there was oil in Iraq, but because there was more oil in Saudi Arabia that we have to protect. So we build military bases in Iraq. And then 20 years from now, when China comes looking for that oil, because they're going to pass us up, we're in decline. China's on the rise. And they're going to want those resources that we've been taking all this time. So we're going to have bases in Iraq to keep the Chinese, to keep their hands off of the Saudi Arabian oil and the Iraqi oil. I think the left kind of assumed that it was about Iraq's oil. It wasn't. Saudi Arabia's is more important, and that's why we're so friendly with the Saudis. No matter what happens, they're our allies. And that's the reason why.
Well, again, Alex, I want to thank you for coming on the program and informing our audience of much of the research that you're getting started in, much of the research and avenues that you have delved into. And I'm hoping in a month I will be a little bit more on track with your getting a couple of your books on the mind control so that we can look into that.
Okay, fine.
And that would, I sincerely look forward to it, and I want to thank you. And again, you're...
just do a Google search for Alex Constantine's Blacklist.
There you go.
And you'll get there, and then you'll be off for the rest of your life.
And so, and again, you've got a number of books that, I mean, if, I'm sure they're going to be quite interesting because your articles are, so... And again, want to thank you, and thank you, Katie. And this is KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado. And coming up next, I'm not sure. If they may have changed the programming on me, so I'll just say that we're going to sign off for the night. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Thank you. It was fun.
Good night.